It's not possible to function properly in an illusionary world, a world that's created in someone's imagination. We're not meant to romanticize any aspect of life, but rather we're expected by God to embrace the real world, the world we find ourselves living in, and we are to live in terms of that reality. This is God's world. We need to function in that reality according to God's truth. To tolerate romantic views of life and romantic views about relationships is an attempt to create a different world and function according to a different standard. That's why we do that. We create this other reality. And so we say, well, we can function in a different way in this other reality that we create. But to do that is to live an illusion. It's to live in a self-deception mode. It's to live a lie, and therefore it's destructive. A vitally important area of life that is severely assaulted by the romanticizing tendency in our day has to do with the area of sex and sexuality. People romanticize that. God has made humans to be sexual beings, and sexual fulfillment is core to their well-being, both physically and spiritually. However, when people's understanding about sex and sexual fulfillment flows from their illusionary world, this wrong perception of what life is like, they open themselves up to all kinds of deception and also perversion. God's plan for sexual activity and fulfillment is simple. There's nothing complex about what God said in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 24. He said, therefore a man shall leave father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. This is a very distilled definition of sexual morality. In that verse, it's all contained there. God reveals here that sex was designed for an intimate union between one man and one woman, a covenantal relationship. Every question about what is proper and improper with respect to sexual expression and fulfillment is covered in this verse. As you meditate upon it, as you unpack it, you'll find it all there. When any other passage of Scripture condemns any other kind of sexual perversion, it is based upon this verse. So any perversion that is condemned in Scripture comes back to this verse, and you'll find the basis for that condemnation, because it is contradicting or violating what God had said in Genesis 2:24. So in this verse you have the essence of sexual morality, and any question you have and any temptation in the sexual realm that comes your way can be answered and dealt with by this verse. It gives you a clear, simple, and comprehensive standard of morality with which you can counter every sexual temptation. What Genesis 2:24 tells us is that the only legitimate context for sexual expression is the marriage relationship. And this one flesh that it mentions is not only talking about the sexual union, but is also talking about relational intimacy, the intimate relationship that is connected to that whole aspect of the one flesh. Thus the Lord who created us as sexual beings shows that the only legal expression and the only possibility of truly fulfilling or satisfying our sexual desires is through the intimate relationship, the relationship with God and a relationship with the spouse. Those are the only avenues for any kind of sexual expression and sexual fulfillment. Sexual intimacy, as God designed it in marriage, is inseparable from relational intimacy. You must keep that. That's a very important aspect of understanding sexuality, is the relational dynamic and component of it. To be one flesh in marriage is a vivid picture of what we were created for. And we were created to be joined, to become one body in Christ, to be united with Him in such intimacy and such closeness, where we actually become one body. Our union with Christ is about being joined to Him through an intimate relationship. Intimate relationship is integral to what it means to be one flesh. If you grasp this, you'll realize that sexual fulfillment is only possible in the context of relationship. Wholesome, meaningful, God-glorifying relationship. That is the only context that God has given us and has pointing us to for sexual activity and sexual fulfillment. What is the basis of the fundamental underlying principle of godly relationship? It's self-sacrifice. That's what is the core of any godly relationship, is self-sacrifice. And this doesn't change when it comes to the sexual relationship. Thus, we must not think about sexual fulfillment other than in terms of denying oneself. Sexuality must be viewed in that terms of denying oneself in a comprehensive way. So sexual fulfillment is only possible within an intimate relationship of self-denial. This is the only kind of sex that God allows, and thus the only kind that glorifies Him. It needs to be realized that all deviant sexual activities are self-serving. Everything that goes against what God has revealed in Genesis 2:24 is self-serving. Taking advantage of others, lying to others, ignoring others, placing self-gratification above God and above others. Selflessness is ultimately being focused upon God's will. It's denying autonomy. It's denying the fact that I want to be a law unto myself. I want to make my own laws. I want to set up my own standards. I want to decide how I'm going to act on my own. So it's denying that, and it's denying self-serving. And in its place, we submit to every word from God's mouth. We serve Him and we serve others with our whole heart. So the goal of life is not to be satisfying every desire we have, every desire that comes into our hearts, but serving God and others, denying self so that we might do God's will. Sexual activity outside of an intimate, self-sacrificing relationship indicates the existence of a distorted understanding of relationship itself. I don't understand relationship, which will negatively impact all your relationships. Those who pursue sexual fulfillment outside of an intimate marriage relationship are strengthening their illusion, their illusions about relationship and their illusions about sexual fulfillment. To separate sexual fulfillment from an intimate marriage relationship is proof that you are deceived about both sex and relationship. What is the meaning of sex? What is the meaning of relationship? What do they look like? How do they operate? You don't know the true meaning or purpose of either. Satan wants you to believe a lie about the purpose of sex and thus tempts you to create a different world, an illusion, an imaginary world, a romanticized world. One critical thing that Satan promotes is the idea that sexual expression and fulfillment are possible without intimate relationship. Sexual sin thrives on romanticizing relationships, in other words, upon relationships that are self-made, that are illusions. They don't exist other than in the mind of the person who's making them. Whether you're talking about any deviant sexual practice, whether you're referring to prostitution, a one-night stand, an affair, pornography, masturbation, all these deviant practices all entail fantasy. They all entail fantasy sex that is devoid of God-defined relationship. All of these things fall into that camp. There's no intimate, God-glorifying intimacy of relationship involved in that. They all have to do with selfishly seeking to satisfy one's passions in the wrong context and in the wrong way. Now, out of these five things, deviant sexual behaviors that we listed, we could list more, obviously. But usually out of these things, many people, and including many Christians, believe that something like masturbation hurts no one and thus is harmless. It's a harmless sexual activity. But is it harmless? I assure you it's not, and I'll tell you why. Because when you practice that, when you practice masturbation, you are undermining your perception of true sexuality and your perception of intimate relationship. You are moving further away from attaining true sexual fulfillment and therefore increasing your frustration and sense of dissatisfaction. You're violating your relationship with God, and you're also retarding your ability to develop a true meaningful relationship. So the person who's masturbating, whether you're married or not, you're distorting your understanding of relationship and strengthening your dependence upon the illusion rather than dealing with the reality of your relationship. So you create something else. You create an illusion. You create a fantasy world and you function within that world. To embrace a wrong understanding about relationship and practice, that error harms your relationship with God, with your wife, or with your future wife. It destroys those relationships. It undermines your concept of what true relationship looks like. So don't buy into the lie that says once you're married, then you can change your perception of sex and relationship, because you won't. You see, what masturbation does is it grants legitimacy to self-centered, relationless sex. And I assure you, that is what you will take into your marriage. If you allow lust to dominate your mind before you're married, this habit will continue after marriage. Self-serving sex before marriage will mean self-serving sex after marriage. It doesn't go away. These are things that need to be understood, need to be channeled and brought under control before you even enter into marriage. Selfishness sidesteps the hard work required in godly relationship. And that seems to be the easy escape route, is I don't want to have to work through these issues, I don't want an intimate relationship, and so you find other ways to serve yourself. It seeks satisfaction and fulfillment through a quick fix, an imitation of the real thing, and thus cannot satisfy. Every sexual experience outside of an intimate marriage relationship ultimately leaves you unfulfilled. And since you are being led by selfishness, you'll be plunged into more and more selfish attempts to find satisfaction. But when you do that, you'll be hurting all your relationships, as well as increasing your own personal emptiness and frustration. You see, the world offers momentary flickers of delight, but these cannot provide the deep, abiding contentment that our hearts truly desire, that our beings truly is searching for. Real contentment and sexual fulfillment is unattainable if you bypass relationship, and that means relationship as God has defined it. True biblical manhood means doing God's will. It's not about having the freedom to serve your own wants. A primary indicator of your devotion to God and your commitment to doing His will is measured by how you submit to Him in the area of sexuality and pursuing intimate relationship. When we are not sacrificing ourselves for God and others, we will be weak when it comes to resisting sin, and one of the areas where the flesh takes hold of us when we are selfish is in the area of sex. It spirals downwards from that area. It's one of the key areas that will assault us. When we embrace romantic views about sexuality, we will justify our selfish actions in this area of sex and in our relationships. Intimate relationship is undermined when self-serving is in charge, and there can be no sexual fulfillment when there is no intimate self-sacrificial relationship. Those who engage in sexual activity outside of biblical intimacy are self-willed. You are serving yourself, you are setting up your own standards, you are being a law unto yourself, which means you have placed yourself and your desires above others and above God and His will. An important way to fight against sexual sin is to work on selflessness, the self-sacrificial service of others. You don't often see the connection between that, but it's a vital aspect. I'm going to fight in this area against sexual sin. It starts with a self-sacrificial attitude and sacrificing myself, because that's what you are doing in order to resist and stand against sexual temptation as well. It's denying self. Unless your sexuality is being expressed in, being channeled toward, and nurtured in a relationship of biblical intimacy, you will be embracing and strengthening an illusion about sexuality and about relationship. Romanticizing or fantasizing about this is to embrace a distorted perception of what relationships are meant to be. And the more you practice that kind of relating, the more you engage in that kind of perception of relationship, well, actually what you're practicing is not relationship. Practicing something that is anti-relationship, because you're not delving into the depths of what relationship requires and working out intimacy. But the more you do that, the more removed from reality you do become. Our sexuality has been given to us so that we might pursue intimate relationship. And therefore the only legitimate sexual activity is in the context of an intimate marriage relationship. Moreover, sexual contentment and satisfaction is only obtained in an intimate marriage relationship. Every other suggestion of sexual activity is a temptation. It's an attempt to destroy your ability to have an intimate relationship with your spouse and spiral you downwards into the bottomless pit of unfulfilled sexual frustration. That's all it's going to do, and suck you down deeper. The world tells you that sexual fulfillment is attained in the sexual act, the very stark act itself. That's where your fulfillment is attained. That's where it is achieved. The world tells you that it doesn't need to be wrapped in a genuine intimate relationship, that the relationship is irrelevant to the sexual act. It's got no connection. But that is a lie. So the tendency is always to engage in different kinds of sexual activities and take more and more risks until your life and reputation are destroyed. And yet, even then, those who have the romanticized perception of sex keep chasing after the false fulfillment and satisfaction. They keep looking for this thing that is not satisfying them. The modern world believes sex addiction is a disease. They believe that. So these people that are just caught up in this, it's a disease. It's something they can't control. It's not a disease by any means. It is an out-of-control selfishness that can never be satisfied. It can never be fulfilled. And so the selfishness is just serving this selfish desire. And the more it takes on and does these things, the more it needs. And thus you see the spiral where it deepens. You spiral downwards into the pit of dissatisfaction. And Romans 1, you read Romans 1, you see that spiraling thing of working deeper into the debauchery that much of the world is possessed by or caught up in. When people persistently choose sinful actions rather than obedience to God, He hands them over to their sin. He hands them over to be controlled by it. He aggressively and actively hands people into it. You want that? You've got it. It's yours. And they chase after their illusion, after something that's impossible to attain, something that can't be satisfied in the way that they're trying to satisfy it, and yet they keep chasing it. They can't stop chasing it, believing that they will find their satisfaction in the next fantasy, in the next experience, in the next self-serving act. If we read Romans chapter 1, just from verse 24, 26, and 28, therefore God also gave them up to uncleanness in the lusts of their hearts, to dishonor their bodies among themselves. For this reason God gave them up to vile passions. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which are not fitting. So God actively gave these people up to this. If you're a believer, God could still hand you over to your sin, but this will be unto salvation. He will do it unto salvation, though the path he takes you down could be a rough path. Remember, Paul talked to the Corinthians about handing a member of their congregation over to Satan for the destruction of the flesh so that the spirit might ultimately be saved. 1 Corinthians 5 and verse 5. Let's hand this brother over, even if it's the destruction of his flesh, that his spirit will be saved. To practice patterns of behavior that contradict God's truth will leave you trying to stand against your own sin, and that's in your own life, as well as the sin in the world that confronts you and from many angles, but standing against that in your own power, because God withdraws his grace, he withdraws his enabling in that sense for you to stand and overcome. And basically you find yourself standing on your own with your own ability. And you're incapable of overcoming any bondage of sin if God hands us over to these uncontrollable desires. This is a sobering thought and should drive us to Christ in humility and dependence, always looking to him and trusting in him, repenting of our sin and seeking his grace and power to help us walk in righteousness. This is a constant need. We are never out of that need, where we absolutely depend upon Christ and are to be looking to him for the grace to walk in the way that he has revealed we should walk. We as men are meant to be leaders in all areas of life. We are meant to be leaders in all areas of morality. And we are meant to be leaders in the area of sexual purity. This can only be done through the grace and the power of Christ, working with a biblical understanding of what is true sexuality, what it means, and how inseparable true sexuality is from intimate relationship. Sex is not our thing, something we do, merely some desire that needs to be fulfilled. It's not strictly a personal thing. Sex is fundamentally a relational thing, and we need to hold that. That needs to be the guiding principle in our eyes. What comes from Genesis 2:24 and comes up in many other places, it's fundamentally a relational thing. And if we hold that, this is a key that helps us fight against sexual temptation as we understand it in this light. We must always think about sex in the context of relationship, a God-defined relationship which includes self-sacrifice and intimacy. To romanticize sex is to create an illusion about it. It's to deceive ourselves about what sex is and how one finds fulfillment in this area. To be deceived about this is to be deceived about true relationship with God and even true relationship with others. Protection against sexual sin rests in a devout relationship with God, which in turn will impact our other relationships. Life is about relationship. That's what it is. That's the fundamental essence of life, is relationship. Remove this, and you know what you have? You have hell. Remove relationship, and you have hell. One of the great torments and agonies of hell will be the utter absence of any relationship with God or any other people. Utter loneliness, the utter separation of any sense of relationship, that will be unbearable. That's not the only torment, but that's going to be a fundamental aspect of the torment in hell. If you understand the connection between sex and intimate relationship, and if by God's grace you bow your will and your passions and your desires to Christ's truth, then you will be able to stand against sexual temptation. We are kept pure by grace and truth, and the vital truth to help fight selfish sex is realizing that selfish sex ultimately increases sexual frustration. It does not deal with the thing that it's trying to deal with. It might appear to provide a quick fix, but the quick fix is undermining the very thing that alone brings fulfillment. And the very thing that alone brings sexual fulfillment is intimate relationship. All sex that's devoid of intimate relationship is outside of God's defined boundaries and therefore is sinful. All sex that is self-serving is outside God's divine boundaries and is thus sinful. Prostitution is an illusion of relationship. It's an illusion. There's a pretense. And both partners in that perverse act are serving themselves. They're both doing that for their own advancement. It's a cold-blooded deception perpetrated by both. The sexual act is engaged in for selfish reasons. The only context for sex is biblical intimacy, where a man and a woman covenant to be one flesh, which includes being legally and emotionally committed to selflessly serving the other person for their whole life. That's the essence of what it is. And that's the context God has shown us, where this is fulfilled and how we are to understand it. Don't pursue a quick fix. Rather pursue what's needed for intimate relationship with Christ, which is denying self to do God's will by serving others. When we are doing God's will, when we are buying our hearts to do what God has revealed, that's going to take tremendous denying of ourselves. And as we practice denying of ourselves, we get the victory and we gain the victory over all these different things that tempt us and seek to draw us away. A vital part of selflessness has to do with obeying God with respect to sexual activity. God is not being cruel by demanding sexual purity. He's not saying, I'm going to really torment these people and demand them to be pure. Rather, this demand for purity, you know what it does? It pushes us to where true satisfaction is found, in intimate relationship. And this goes for marriage, and it goes for before you're married. It's pushing us to intimate relationship. So even within marriage, sexual fulfillment is only attained where there is intimate relationship in that marriage, not where there's the sexual act is just something that is tacked onto the marriage. And that's what God, demanding purity, is pushing us toward. And our flesh, what it wants to do is sidestep that and do the quick fix to just find something else so that I can bypass and avoid this intimacy of relationship. So I plead with you to hear this, to believe it, and with all your might to stand upon this truth. This is the sword of the Spirit that can and must be used as you seek to be sexually pure, as you think through these things. Because when we're fighting against sexual temptation, yes, we need God's grace and we're crying out to Him for His grace. But at the same time, we need a sword, we need knowledge, we need the truth so that I understand why I'm standing, how to stand, and I'm assured of the victory as I stand. And one of the key tools that you're fighting sexual temptation is this intimacy of relationship. There is no intimate relationship in this temptation that is facing me, in this act, whatever it is. And therefore, I know this is wrong. It is immoral. And what that's got to push me to at that point straight away would be intimacy with God, intimacy with Christ. And I realize, Lord, help me. I need you. I need your strength. I need your grace. I need these things. And that pushes you to intimate relationship with Christ and ultimately with your spouse. God is putting the pressure on you to push you back to this primary relationship, primarily with Him, but also with whatever relationship you have with respect to if you're married or if you're seeking a wife. That's what it's saying. This is what has to be honed. This is the relationship that has to be honed in this context. Those habits and those selfish serving things, and it goes for us all, wherever we are, we can be 50 years old and practice selfishness. And so you constantly have to be fighting against that and realize that as you fight selfishness in one area, whether it's something as basic as doing this basic chore, as you expected, you're denying self, you're strengthening yourself in fighting against sins in all other areas. It's a comprehensive thing. And when we fail there, we are weakening ourselves in all these other areas. And as we resist and as we stand, we are strengthening and growing in strength and ability and confidence to stand. And so that is the mindset that needs to change and realize, yes, that's how we take on this victorious thing. It's in the very dusty struggles of denying ourselves day to day in areas. And realize when we are not denying ourselves, we've got a comprehensive undoing of ourselves. And the sexual area is a fundamental area where the undoing is most often exposed and shown. So the counsel is, you fight it right at the very beginning and comprehensively at the beginning, because there's no place for it. There's no place for entertaining the thought. There's no place for entertaining any of these things because there's no relationship here. There's no intimate relationship in place. So it's not allowed. So that's your starting point. It's not allowed. And then you pursue the intimate relationship. A person who embraces the sexual quick fix romanticizes sex. He creates a fantasy world with fantasy relationships and situations and equates these with reality. He prefers these fantasies to true relationships and thus has no energy to pursue the work on the real relationships he has. I don't have time to work this out. I don't have time to mull through this stuff. I don't have time to seek to serve this person in the way I should be serving them. I don't have time to deal with this. And so you stay away from the intimate relationship. And we need to realize, no, this is wrong. Whatever situation is there, God is pushing us to intimacy and to work through and to sort it out, and which is not easy, and it's not something that is often pleasant to do, but that is where fulfillment is. That is where the satisfaction is. And that is the strength and the power that we should have from the working of the Spirit to say, no, this is the path I've got to go. I know where I've got to aim. I know what I've got to do, and I've got the energy to do it because that is the goal that I'm aiming at. So we need to believe this rather than preferring our fantasies. We don't want to romanticize, have a romanticized version of relationship and seek fulfillment in those romanticized versions. Because the person who does that, it suddenly realizes what it's manifesting is his selfishness, because it's all about him. It's all about me. And that's where my fulfillment is found, when it revolves around me. The focus is upon himself or myself and my recreated world. And what I do is I design this new world according to how it satisfies me. So everything that I want that will satisfy me, I just create it. And that I live in that world. And I live in that fantasy. And we can do that. So we find the perfect world that we've designed. But to do that is to be at war with God, because God is pushing us to to intimacy of relationship with our spouse, with other people, and ultimately with Him. And all of those are connected. As we pursue intimacy with Christ, we are going to be drawn more intimate with our spouses, or we are practicing the ability to be intimate with our spouse if you're not yet married. And also that's going to impact our other relationships as well as we work in that way. So can you see what God is doing as He's pushing us? Our flesh wants an ejection, and we pull the ejection up and get popped out of the situation so we don't have to deal with it. Sexual fulfillment through an intimate marriage relationship enhances, strengthens, and advances all our relationships. The contrary is also true. Sexual activity outside of an intimate marriage relationship undermines all other relationships. So these are weapons. These are swords that you're going to hold. And let's use that in the temptation. You say, realize what is actually going on here. This, what I'm actually engaging in here, is undermining everything. I'm undermining everything that brings satisfaction and fulfillment in my life. Because firstly, you're sinning against God, and that puts you in a bad position. And secondly, you're strengthening rather than defeating your selfishness. That selfishness, which if it remains unchecked, taints every other relationship you have. Selfishness destroys. And the sexual area is one area where we can practice self-denial and get a reflection and an indication from God as to how we are growing and managing to stand in this area. So our sexuality has one ultimate purpose: to glorify God. That's why God gave it to us. God made sex, and He made us sexual beings so that we might glorify Him by living our lives in righteousness and unto His glory in this area of sexuality. Our relationships and our sexuality are meant to serve God's kingdom. That's what they're designed for. And that's how you've got to see it. I understand I'm a sexual being. I understand what this is. But what's it for? What is its purpose? Is it just for my own gratification? Is it just for my own enjoyment? No. It's for the glory of God. And once you understand that, then it kind of brings in your light. Well, okay, well, how am I going to glorify God with this? All that God has created and given us is for this purpose of exalting His name. So we ought to meditate upon the fact that God made sex to glorify Himself. And when we meditate upon that fact, then we meditate upon the fact as well of asking ourselves, well, then how do I do that? What does that look like? How do I glorify the Lord in this area? But God has told us how we do that, and He's not made it complicated. He's revealed it to us and given us the tools and the weapons and the ability to do that, to glorify Him in this area. God is calling our hearts now to respond, turn, look to Me, and know that you don't have the strength, you don't have the ability. And that casts us upon Him in humility and faith. As 1 Thessalonians 4, verses 3-5 say, "For this is the will of God, your sanctification, that you should abstain from sexual immorality, that each of you should know how to possess his own vessel in sanctification and honor, not in passion of lust like the Gentiles who do not know God." And then it's 1 John 2 verses 1 and 2. "My little children, these things I write to you so that you may not sin. And if anyone sins, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ the righteous. And He Himself is the propitiation for our sins, and not for ours only, but also for the whole world." So God calls us to holiness. He's provided for our failures, but He's given us the tools and the ability to understand the use and the purpose of sexuality. We have the grace to cover our sin, but we have the call as well to move on and mature so that we can attain the intimacy and the depth of relationship that God has called us to. Are there any questions or comments? The ultimate intimacy that we're pursuing is intimacy with Christ. I believe the marriage relationship and the one flesh is, as Ephesians talks about, this mystery of Christ and His church. And I believe when God gives that gift of celibacy, there's no necessity for the sexual relationship and intimacy. I believe that is all fulfilled in the relationship with Christ, which is what the marriage relationship is pointing to. And so there is a place, it's a limited place, as far as numbers go, in God's order of things. God gives that gift, and the fulfillment is satisfied in God. And I believe what you would have on the human level would be an intimacy of relationship, but non-sexual, but a deep intimacy there, and the rest of the whole intimacy is fulfilled in God. Okay, if there's no other thoughts or questions, we can pray.